Hello and welcome to The Soprano Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Today we will be discussing Season 4, Episode 9 of The Sopranos, titled Whoever Did This. This episode aired November 10th, 2002. It was written by Robin Green and Mitchell Burgess, and it was directed by Tim Van Patten. Here is the HBO synopsis for this episode. After an aggressive team of reporters lowers the boom on Uncle Junior, his lawyers try a new strategy. Ralph has some fun at the expense of Polly and his mother, but soon winds up with his own family problems. Meanwhile, Tony again finds refuge at the stable. I gotta say, this is maybe my top five.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a brilliant performance by Joe Pantoliano.
Mm-hmm.
He won the Emmy for Best Supporting.
Richly deserved.
Actor. This episode was submitted as well as Christopher.
Okay.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Not huge, you know, no big moments for him, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this episode though, killer.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously a very significant episode.
Yeah.
But what I had forgotten was just how that sort of top five-ness of it, mm-hmm. where I was like, I always remembered it as a good episode. But watching it for this podcast, I was like, not only is this a good episode, it's literally one of the best episodes they ever did.
Wow.
Like,
that is a true statement.
It's way up there. There's just so much going on.
Yeah.
You know?
And it felt like a penultimate episode.
Yeah.
Because we usually get these kind of episodes right up to the end.
Which one is this?
This is the ninth.
Yeah. It's kind of surprising that it comes this early. Mm-hmm. Early is not the right word, but for the significance of this episode, it comes early.
Agreed. Yeah. And we open the episode with Junior at court. And did you notice how, like, when Junior was leaving court before he went outside, it really did look like The Untouchables?
Yeah.
You know, like a scene from The Untouchables. I mean, he is dressed like a badass boss, right?
Right.
He's got the fedora and everything. But he's pissed about missing the early bird special.
Yeah.
Which is just funny to have that,
yeah,
as the note that Junior's carrying with him.
Exactly.
Looking so badass, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, but I also noticed something that I never noticed before, which is just a minor thing, but when he's like, now I'm going to miss the early bird special, he emphasizes that statement with a very, like, aggressive arm gesture.
Yeah,
like, his whole arm goes up.
It does go up.
It's actually really funny. It's just so, like, emphatic.
Yeah, yeah. And as he leaves the courthouse, he's ignoring every reporter except for this beautiful reporter, Allison.
Yeah.
He turns around to and gets smacked in the head with this boom.
Right.
And takes a topple down the stairs. Just a bit of comedy to open up this episode.
Who was that stunt man, I wonder?
Right.
Was he really that old, or did they, like, shave his head and, like, kind of put a Junior right. sort of hairpiece on
Bald
him?
Pate. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. He was probably like a 30-year-old guy or something, I'm guessing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. That's yeah. just funny.
Yeah. Probably my size.
Yeah.
And weight, and yeah, took a fall.
I mean, and that's obviously what it was.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm not equating my own physique, by the way, with a 70-year-old man.
I'm glad that you clarified that, yeah. Just so everyone knows.
Just, I'm just saying, height and,
yeah.
and weight.
Yeah. Benjamin and Bowen.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Next scene, Tony actually brings Carmela to the stables, which is interesting because we left them last episode on a very tense note.
Mm-hmm.
Carmela did steal money from him, and he suspects very highly that is her.
Yeah.
That it is her who did it. And this is a sweet moment, though.
And this scene is very key. You know, it really emphasizes Tony's love for this animal,
mm-hmm.
which is important in this episode, that he loves the horse very much.
Yeah.
So we get right back to Junior's situation and the aftermath of his fall. He needs to get a little neurological testing, and he does seem a bit confused. So this wasn't just a hard fall. I mean, this was a hard fall, perhaps with some consequences for his brain.
Yeah.
And I mean, from there, we go directly into Tony arriving at the hospital, an indignant Tony. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, sue the goddamn Justice Department.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, hey, you know, Uncle June may have dementia now. He was already working up to it, possibly, but this fall and this injury to his head maybe tipped him over the edge.
Mm-hmm. I liked how Janice came in. Again, no filter, just insults the doctor.
Right.
And the hospital.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is a serious turning point for Junior.
It is.
Right? For the character. It's going to be interesting to see what comes of this. But we go from there to Ralph finally stumbled upon who actually blabbed about right. the joke. Right? Because yeah. he kind of just figures it out in this one scene.
Yeah, exactly.
He's obviously been stewing on it for a while, right? And comes to the conclusion that it must have been little Polly who told Polly, who told Johnny Sack.
Right.
And yeah, it's obviously, yeah, just seems like it has, because why would he come to this conclusion now? You know, yeah. the joke was, what, episode 2?
Right.
Or something? So, yeah. yeah. But he uses it to launch into this joke, this prank.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that it's right for Ralphie to stew a bit. I mean, he nearly lost his life over it.
True.
And, you know, it's funny that they spent kind of a whole episode asking this question, who could have told Johnny Sack? How could Johnny have found out? And then right away mm-hmm. in this episode, Ralphie just kind of pieces it together perfectly well.
Yeah.
But I think it's the first clue that this is going to be a significant episode.
Hmm.
That such a significant mystery for these characters has been solved here.
Yeah, no, good point. Yeah. I just was wondering, would they have transferred his phone call in to Nucci?
Just so readily?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously not late at night, but it's mm-hmm. late for Nucci.
Yeah.
It's a late night for Nucci.
Yeah, she's in full on like REM sleep.
But this whole Detective Mike Hunt, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania,
yeah.
the gerbil.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so cruel.
Hi, this is Detective Mike Hunt, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania Police Department. You have a son, Peter Paul?
Oh my God, what happened?
He's all right, ma'am, but I'm afraid he's in a little trouble. We found him in a public men's room in Lafayette Park. I don't know how to put this delicately. He was sucking a Cub Scout's dick.
Yeah, he goes on a really good run here.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hilarious. Props, you know. Props Robin Green and Mitchell Burgess.
Right.
The dialogue here is just amazing.
Yeah.
Ralph's prank. And yeah, I mean, it's just, as you said, very cruel.
Mm-hmm.
You really feel for Nucci, you know. It's
of course.
Poor Nucci. Like, I didn't realize. You know, here we have back-to-back episodes where someone's treating her very poorly.
Yeah.
Being very mean to her,
yeah.
you know, really making her suffer. And this actress does a good job of making you feel that kind of just, mm-hmm. oh, just leave her alone. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
this poor old lady.
Yeah, poor old lady. But hey, this was the performance that won him an Emmy.
Right.
Right here, we are witnessing it.
But yeah, so, you know, we can only imagine the consequences that that's going to have.
Mm-hmm.
But a really great scene from Joe Pantoliano. And, you know, he just keeps it coming
yep.
throughout this episode. And from there, we get back to Junior.
Mm-hmm.
We basically just have these two storylines in this episode.
Yeah.
And Junior's pretty peppy in the hospital.
Seems okay.
Yeah. Tony comes in, and then right away, Tony gets a little concerned that maybe Junior has some serious dementia.
Right.
But it turns out that Tony was just kind of misinterpreting what Junior said.
Yes. Because Junior was talking about
right.
a Junior,
mm-hmm.
Referring to this man that they both knew.
Right.
I love the detail of, I always love when TV shows do this, where
yeah.
they add sound effects to things that you know are not necessarily needed.
Sure.
So like if a fly was buzzing over Junior's head, they'd add the little
zzz.
Mm-hmm. But for this, he's sipping juice out of a straw, and
that's
they
right.
add that little like slurpy sound.
Yeah, they do.
It's just so goofy because
yeah.
no one makes that sound when
right.
they drink juice from a straw. But I just like those kind of little details like that. And yeah, Tony gets an idea to take advantage of this,
right? And
calls
it's not
Mel,
yeah, the lawyer, and it's not a bad idea at all,
right?
So, you know, maybe they got a mistrial on their hands.
Exactly. And I thought in this moment, remember when Junior wanted to have Tony whacked?
Right.
I thought about that. Yeah. And then because the scene is kind of sweet, you don't see animosity between these two men. Like it's you know, water under the bridge. They have moved on.
Right.
Tony loves him. Junior loves him. For the most part.
I mean, doesn't Junior literally say when Tony walks in, hey, nephew number one.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I thought about that too. It's all water under the bridge. Yeah. Who would have thought? Mm-hmm. Just a few years ago, they were trying to kill each other. Literally.
Right. Speaking of killing each other.
Yeah.
This is a good segue.
Right.
Into the stupidest game two boys could ever play. I mean, come on.
Guess what, though?
It's a real thing.
I remember this years ago.
Uh-huh.
When I was listening to the commentary track for this episode on DVD.
Okay.
And Mitchell Burgess, I believe, says that he played this game as a kid.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I might be getting that wrong. Maybe it didn't literally involve an actual real arrow. It was just a Lord of the Rings themed thing.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure he said that he played this. And, you know, it makes sense. I have no idea how old he is, but I'm guessing that he's, you know, 50s, maybe 60s. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But back then, you know, kids did play super dangerously.
No, sure. It is believable. It's just a stupid fucking game.
Yes.
It really is.
Yes.
Because Ralph's son, and we discover Ralph has a son, which is, I think, the more surprising part of this whole episode, that he has a son all along with this other woman that he cares for. Like, he cares for this boy in some way. I mean, well, definitely he cares for him, because we see it in the next moment when he's shot with the arrow. His son's shot with the arrow.
Right, which happens off screen.
Off screen.
Yeah.
The maid comes knocking and pounding at the door, and he rushes out to his son, and we get, you know, single cam, you know, handheld running with Ralph motion back and forth from the body back to the house.
Yeah.
And you really see Pantaleano is really putting on a great performance here of fear and terror, really.
Showing us, that emotional panic of just, you forget that he's, you know, the guy that bashed a stripper's head in and, you know, a pregnant stripper and like all the other hundreds of, you know, just horrific atrocities we've seen Ralph perpetrate, you know, in his time on this show. And beginning right here, you sort of forget about that stuff, because he's showing us Pantoliano, a whole different side to this character that we've never even seen hinted at. And he does it really convincingly, which I think is pretty impressive.
Yeah. And it just carries from there into the next scene at the hospital. And this is really a difficult scene. And when I watched it the first time through for this podcast, I definitely got a little emotional.
Yeah.
It was, it's pretty intense. And there's a lot of different beats here. So we start with Tony and Carmela entering the hospital. They see Ralph, Vito, Hank, they're waiting in the waiting room together. Vito's the one who kind of gives Tony the look of like, it's not good with his son. And then there's this beat of Ralph staring at the other boy, right? The boy who's technically responsible for the arrow, and not losing eye contact with
him.
And Tony has to like snap him out of this.
Yeah.
Because again, this guy's a sociopath, psychopath.
Right.
He probably wants to kill that kid. Probably would kill that kid given the chance.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, we as an audience feel immense sympathy, maybe even empathy, for his situation.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That's crazy writing, right?
Yeah.
You have a sinister character like Ralph Cifaretto, and in this moment of his pain, you are sharing in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you do that?
And he's like the sicko of the series.
Right.
You know, he's definitely like the sickest, most evil character, I would say, in the show at this point.
Sure.
You know, and you're absolutely right. Like, you just are with him as a father in distress, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's really the performance of Pantaleano.
Yeah.
And then his wife enters the scene.
Yeah, his ex-wife. Yeah.
Right. And this is where, you know, it kind of boils over, frustrations. Mm-hmm. She hates Ralph for obvious reasons. She knows who he is. Makes the point that the son is terrified to go over and visit him, and he does. And Ralph loses it. The new husband loses it. Everybody loses it. And Tony has to physically restrain Ralph against the wall and hold him in a choke.
Yeah.
Grasp. And then, he just breaks down.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and then you see Ralphie break down and just collapse, you know, and start just sobbing, you know, with his head in Tony's chest. And again, we're just like, this moment feels so real, and it is so, you do kind of look at this and kind of get choked up, and you're like, it's so crazy again, knowing what the actual relationship is between Tony and Ralph, that, you know, they would find themselves in this moment where Tony is there emotionally for Ralph, trying to comfort him. And then Ralph is just really revealing his vulnerability to Tony and everyone else there in the hospital.
Picking up on Junior's story, we see him still in the hospital but getting ready to leave. Tony is smoking a cigar in the hospital. I noticed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really know about that. I mean, it's not like 1957 anymore. I'm pretty sure you weren't able to smoke cigars in the hospital.
I think up until like the 80s you could in certain areas of the hospital.
Okay.
I think so.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
But their plan, Mel's back, and the plan is to play up the dementia card and get his trial dismissed based on prejudice of some kind.
Yeah, if he's unfit, you know, to be on trial because he has dementia, then they can, you know, push it. They can kick that trial can down the road, or maybe just it never happens. Maybe the DA gives up or whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I think what's noteworthy here is that Junior is just, he really feels like he's out of the woods. Like this plan is going to work. All of his problems are solved.
Yeah. Tony says he has an RN who will play along. So they really thought this out.
Yeah.
So move from that good hospital visit to the next scene, Ralph alone with his son. And Rosalie comes in.
Right. And I like that they placed this scene here. Oh, absolutely. And they have this moment between these two characters. And yet again, it's a whole different Ralph. And he even really says so. You know, he's like, I didn't understand what you're going through, having lost your son. I broke up with you, you know, not long after that happened to you.
Right.
And, you know, I just didn't have empathy.
Specifically because she was such a mess.
Yeah, I remember that line. Yeah, Ro with the grief. You know, I was at my Gumara's all night.
Yeah.
He is very sympathetic now towards her. He's looking for emotional comfort any place that he can get it, and he really needs it, you know, and certain people in his life really see that, and so we get that nice moment. Of course, it ends with a nice little setup for a good joke in the next scene, because Ro at the end of the scene says,
you'll see, he's gonna be fine. He's gonna be a vegetable.
I felt like, oh, that's cruel.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cruel. Because I was so into, like, Ralph's, the sympathy for Ralph, that I thought that joke was, like, cruel to us.
Right.
It wasn't, like, a Nucci cruel. It was, like, they were doing that to us.
Right.
As the audience.
Yeah.
And as the writers, they were doing it.
There's a few moments like that in this episode where it's just kind of like, oh, this is just nasty.
Right.
But it's good. It's entertaining.
So word has gotten out that Artie did take an overdose of pills.
Right.
Which is interesting since there were only two men who knew about it, unless doctors are talking or somebody's talking.
Yeah, I suspect Charmaine.
Oh, but that's as far as the story goes.
Yeah.
Right? At least for what they know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like Charmaine found out the truth somehow and then started spreading it around.
I love the fake wave that Carmela gives at the end of the scene to Artie.
But then, you know, what's also funny too is just that shot of Artie, you know, he's kind of just back at it again with his like pathetic hostess flirting.
Yeah. It's so sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
And then we have a fun scene here with Tony Bacala Jr. kind of doing a run through of the questions And it starts out as a joke, but then Junior gets, you know, pretty touchy
mm-hmm.
about the whole thing.
Yeah, because he remembers his brother.
Yeah, Eckley. Yeah. Yeah, how they mocked him and everything. I mean, because it kind of started off as a joke, right, for Junior when he said, they asked him the first question, and his answer is,
a blonde with big tits and a hat full of Viagra.
But then Tony makes that joke about, wipe your ass with the paper, then they'll know you're crazy. And then Junior's like, no, I get to make the jokes, you don't.
Right.
And he gets very offended.
Yeah. Yeah, I like how Tony calls it a good, clean way out.
Yeah.
When it's far from it.
Yeah, far from it. Yeah.
In their minds, this is good and clean.
They think it's just going to be so easy. You know, all mm-hmm. he has to do is just sound crazy and come up with a bunch of ridiculous answers and kind of just put on a whole performance. But, yeah. You know, we'll see how easy it is, you know.
Yeah. And what's funny is Svetlana is the one who arrives to deliver the nurse who's going to play ball. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I like Svetlana here. Because obviously with Janice answering the door, that puts tension in the air for Janice and Svetlana, who's not having any of it, and ends with Janice crying.
Right.
And like anybody would care about her feelings.
Yeah, exactly. And at that moment, you know, I don't care about her feelings.
No, no one does. Yeah. But interestingly enough, Ro got through to Ralph, who does go to see Father Phil.
Right. That was a line in her scene with Carmella. You know, I suggested that Ralph yep. go see the priest, but he won't. And you're thinking, yeah, of course he won't. He would never do that. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
This is insane.
Yeah.
He's actually, so he is really broken up over this. So much so, he's going to see Father Phil.
Yeah.
And I thought this interaction was kind of interesting. I don't know the Bible word for word,
mm-hmm.
but I do know the lyrics to Sympathy for the Devil.
Right.
And I know for a fact that Father Phil is saying,
were you there when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain?
I tried to look it up, and I'm sure Twitter will correct us here.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a direct line from the Bible. It is a direct line from the song Sympathy for the Devil.
It's a direct line from the pen of Mick Jagger.
Right. Right. So
yeah.
I thought this was hilarious that Father Phil is using a Rolling Stone song to get through to Ralph.
Yeah.
Because Ralph says, you know, was Jesus's pain was nothing like what his son is going through.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where Father Phil brings in this line.
Yeah.
I also like it too, because we kind of are having sympathy for the devil, who in this case
Ooh.
Would be as close to Ralph as it could be.
Ooh.
Right?
Oh.
Hey, I mean,
I didn't
I'm
make
going
that
deep.
Connection, but you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a sympathy for the devil situation.
Because he asks him, were you there?
Yeah.
And the lyric is that I was there when Jesus had his moment of doubt and pain.
Right.
So I don't know. It's really interesting. Like yeah. it works on so many different levels here.
I mean, I think that the quote is absolutely intended to be the lyrics, but I sort of just ended it there in my mind thinking like, oh yeah, it's just kind of funny that Father Phil's using Rolling Stones lyrics. But
sure.
That added bit of this sort of sympathy for the devil idea and mm-hmm. Ralph being the devil, which he is, as I said, he's the biggest sicko on this show.
Yeah.
Currently. And yeah, I think that absolutely was intended. That's a deep one, but well spotted.
Check that off.
Yeah.
And we basically end up with Father Phil really trying to sell religion here,
mm-hmm.
but Ralph so distraught, he breaks down. He's not buying it, but he just kind of is lost.
Yeah.
He doesn't really know what's going to work for him to make him feel better.
Right. And what he says here, too, I think is kind of interesting. It's naturally where his mind would go in this situation. He says to Father Phil, you know, I've done terrible things, and so my son is paying for it. And
right.
It's like, yeah, that's we've seen these terrible things that you've done.
Yeah, it's a good
so
point.
The guilt, I mean, he's feeling guilty on multiple levels. First of all, that, you know, his son suffered this grievous injury while under Ralph's quote-unquote supervision,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's the guilt about that, but then there's also just the guilt of, is this karma?
Right.
And then I like what happens here in the next scene. We're back at Casa Soprano, and Carmela updates a skeptical Tony on Ralph's recent good deeds, which as she lists them, you're just like, what? Right. Like, you have to kind of laugh how he's basically set up a $20,000 annual scholarship at Rutgers in Jackie's name.
Right.
Let's not forget that, of course, he oversaw Jackie Jr.'s execution.
Yes, that's right.
He ordered it personally.
He wants to marry Roe.
Yeah, that he proposed to Roe. I mean, it's just kind of funny. And Tony's like, all right, I got sympathy for the guy, but this is, you know, outrageous.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, Tony's son coming in, AJ. And, you know, AJ's just there to, like, just do whatever. But both Tony and Carmela at this point, obviously, they're thinking about Jackie Jr., but they're also thinking more recently about Justin, you know, Cifaretto.
Right.
And you get this really nice moment here with Tony, like this huge outpouring of tenderness towards his son, which AJ is just annoyed by and doesn't understand. But it's, you know, motivated by Tony being like, yes, my son, he's healthy, and I really love him, and I really appreciate that he's here, and he's fine. You know,
and how fragile life can be.
Right. Yeah. And then AJ is just tired of it and walks away. But then, you know, Carmela has that nice look at Tony, kind of like, yeah, I understand what that was about.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good moment there. Very touching.
Yeah.
This next scene, this is, I think, where we pivot in the episode. So Tony is at work and Ralph shows up. He's still a mess. He's unshaven. He's not really put together in his clothing. Mm-hmm. He's not a dandy in this moment.
Yeah, a little he's disheveled.
Not living up to it. Brings Tony a payment, which is pretty nice, being a guy who's going through what he's going through. He's still working.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony here really trying to be sympathetic to Ralph.
Like, right.
You can really see it. And it's just, again, you get a true breakdown in Ralph here, and he says, in through tears, crying, I'm a different man. And maybe he is.
Right.
I mean, we haven't seen yet him change out of this morose state.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in a state of very intense grieving. And I mean, the tears that Pantoliano sheds throughout this episode, you know, he really goes there, does a lot of crying, a lot of breaking down. You know, he breaks down yet again in this scene.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting too, just real quick note, like at the top of this scene, Tony's starting to get over Ralph a little bit. I think he's expecting him, and Tony's just minding his own business. But then when there's that knock on the door, there's this moment of like, oh, who the fuck is that? Like, he's like annoyed, or he just thinks it's Ralphie and he's just like, oh, fucking Ralphie, I don't want to see him right now.
Right.
You know, he's kind of annoyed. Right. But, you know, also a little beat here of Tony kind of stepping up and he's like, hey, you know, I guess there's no good time to tell you this, so I'll just tell you right now, I'm fucking Valentina.
Right. I thought it's a touching scene up to this point.
Right.
Because that's just an odd place to give him that news. It really is. For me, it's just, I was like, right now?
Right.
You're going to do this right now? And, you know, Ralph's reaction, he says nothing. Gets up, go to the hospital, but then he turns because Tony, you know, reminds him about Paiomai.
Right.
Maybe go down to the stables, get your mind off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Paiomai is not the same relationship with Ralph that he does with Tony. This would work for Tony. This is not going to work for Ralph.
Yeah.
And in this moment that Ralph says,
maybe if I met a girl like Carmela, my life could have taken a whole different trajectory.
That's a very odd thing to say to the man whose wife you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That seemed almost out of the blue. I know where he's coming from, why he's saying it, but it just feels like,
yeah,
there's this level of tension
that
they're both not addressing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there always is with them. Right. But yeah, especially there. And then, I mean, it's kind of funny. I interpreted that as kind of a almost like sort of sweet and mature.
Really? I saw it.
Beat.
I saw it like as a undercutting in a Ralph way, a nasty way. To say something
interesting,
yeah, because of the silence from hearing about Valentina. I mean, right. I know he smiles and pats Tony on the leg.
Yeah.
And but
yeah.
I don't think initially the girl that just dumped you,
right.
who is now with your boss, who you particularly don't like, that you're just cool with that because you're going through something with your son.
Yeah.
And I think bringing up Carmella, like you're talking about another man's wife.
Right.
You're talking about her to him is weird.
It's yeah.
a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
It's not a I don't think of it as a compliment at all.
Yeah.
Not in that moment.
That's funny. I mean, I definitely think that you can interpret it that way as well.
Sure.
You know, and I think that, yeah, bringing up Valentina, or Valentina was just brought up. And then, of course, Ralphie bringing up Carmella, you know, is that a passive aggressive thing? Or is it a moment of him saying, hey, maybe I prioritized the wrong things in life. Maybe I should have just settled down with a good woman early on.
Sure.
Instead of chasing, you know, strippers and cocaine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it can be seen as an ambiguous kind of gesture from Ralph. Is it pure or is it passive aggressive? And wow, is this episode filled with ambiguity.
Yes, it
and
is.
And ambiguous gestures.
It really is.
And that's just part of the beauty of this episode.
And then the next beat, as he's leaving the Bing, he bumps into Syl, Chris, and Polly, although they don't make any eye contact.
Right.
And we get this moment as Tony comes out to greet them. Polly has no sympathy whatsoever for Ralph. He knows it was him who called his ma.
Right.
Already accusing him. And says,
I don't care if he's got 100 kids in the ICU with arrows in their heads. He's a piece of shit. You know it, and I know it.
Right.
Just, I mean, we all know it, yes.
It's absolutely
true. It's
like
Pauly snapping us back into reality.
That's exactly
you know?
What it's like, you know? It's, we're, you know, getting caught up in the sympathy for the devil situation. But yeah. I mean, you got to remember, as Polly brings up, I mean, you remember the thousands of incidents with this guy or whatever the line is, but it's something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And Polly has a very good point. Polly also says, if I get proof that Ralph, is the guy who made the prank call to my mom, I'm going to kill him. And you absolutely believe that that is what Polly intends to do.
Yeah. This next moment from Tony, his answer. His response to Polly is really good.
Yeah.
It was like that moment, remember, oh God, what episode? D-Girl?
D-Girl?
I think so. When Christopher comes to the house and Tony says, take some time to think about it.
Right.
Right? Are you going to be with me? And if you are, fine. If you're not, then I hope I never see it. Like, you know, that moment. I felt like that was this moment here for Polly.
Right.
Of Tony being like,
you lay a hand on him. And you're going to answer to me. If you can quote the rules, you can fucking obey them. You hear me? Don't just look at me. This is a business. Did you hear what I said?
Yes.
That's, that was a nice moment there. I like when Tony's boss Tony like that.
Right. Right, yeah, and just really lays down like that heavy hand of authority.
Yeah.
You know, he is not shy to do that. But then, you know, it does take a nice pivot here. Tony softens, you know, after Polly agrees and he's like, you know, great from Tony, the first time we hear this, right? You know, it's a horrible thing. Whoever did it. Of course, this is the episode, whoever did this.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on to say, you know, it's been too long since I've seen your mom. I'll go visit her at Green Grove.
Yeah, he loves it. Polly loves it.
Yeah.
The Tony Sirico here, I don't think we'll ever see him have a more honest or touching look on his face than when Tony says, I'm going to go visit your ma.
It really means something to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great moment of nonverbal, you know, acting from Tony Sirico. And then as he walks off, he has no fucking conception.
Yeah. He got no kids.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, Polly doesn't have children, doesn't have a family. He doesn't know how, this is a very kind of special situation. You know what I mean? And Ralphie needs to be treated differently.
Yeah. So Junior being at work, pretending to whoever is analyzing him and running the test to see if he's truly got dementia. It seems like he's doing a masterful performance. And we get kind of like the feeling of, wait, does he have dementia? Oh, wait, no, he doesn't have dementia. Well, but no, does he? No, that's fake. Like, yeah. Especially with Agent Grosso
right.
standing in the back, rolling his eyes.
Right.
You get kind of mixed signals here.
It's funny because I actually thought that Junior did a terrible job in this scene.
maybe masterful performance was a bit hyperbolic. It wasn't that masterful.
You know, I just thought that he was overselling it. He was going too big.
Right.
Acting too confused.
Sure.
You know, it's just a little too far.
Well, at least for Janice and Bobby, they felt like he was doing a great
job. Which is really great. Yeah. Janice is so pleased by this performance. But yes, Grosso, like you said, he's unmoved. Right. Yeah. He's just like, this is so fake.
It's funny where we get Agent Grosso.
Yeah.
We get Agent Grosso here and there. Just a sprinkling of Grosso.
And he was introduced way back in season one.
Right.
And here he still is. I mean, I wonder if he's maintained throughout the rest of the series. I'm looking for him now.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's Grosso?
Where's Grosso? The question on all Sopranos fans' minds.
Right?
That should be the spinoff.
Where's Grosso?
Yeah.
Ooh.
HBO, right. If you're listening.
We'll write that down. We'll plot it
David
out.
David Chase, if you're listening. Grosso's spinoff.
Wait, is anyone listening?
Yeah. Not anymore. No. They stopped about 30 seconds ago. Yeah.
Well, let's move on, shall we?
So we get a nice ass shot. I mean, that's not the point of the scene. I just want to open up the scene with that.
Yeah.
Because that's how they open the scene.
Yes.
Tony is napping with Valentina.
Yeah.
And gets a call. Just this is where the whole episode just pivots dramatically. Just sudden left turn. He gets a call from Lois at the stables. There's been a fire. And Pai Oh Mai was burnt to a crisp and is now dead.
Right. Had to be, in Lois's words, destroyed.
Right.
Pai Oh Mai was burned so badly, had to be put down. But she uses the word destroyed.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I wonder if that's the nomenclature for stable animals.
Yeah, I guess when you're talking about animals, like that's what you have to,
right?
That's how you say it. And I mean, Tony, just the look on his face. I mean, we've never seen him so upset over a person's death, practically.
True.
You know? And
she says it looks electrical.
Right.
Blown out light bulb.
Right.
We do pick up with Tony showing up at the stable.
Yeah.
Burnt down, right?
And this is such a contrast. You know, I feel like, and by contrast, I mean to the scene where he was first at the stables in this episode with Carmella. Because you view that scene in isolation and you're like, what's the point of this scene? Because literally all that happens is Tony introduces Carmella to Pai Oh Mai, points out the goat. You know, nothing really happens in that scene whatsoever. And so you're like, wait, what was this setting up? And here it is. Tony had such a pure love for the animal. And this was such a great place for him to be. He was so content and peaceful here in the stables. And now it's a very cruel reversal to be there now. His horse is dead. The stables are destroyed.
Yeah. Well, remember we got that lovely ending shot. That one episode with Tony in the stable with a lying down Pai Oh Mai.
Yeah.
And he was petting her as she was lying down. This scene ends with him bending down to, you know, a now dead Pai Oh Mai on her side.
Yeah.
Being dragged off. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that touch, that detail was pretty devastating. I mean, very theatrical, but devastating how, you know, the hooves are chained up and as Tony is just regarding her silently, she literally gets dragged away from him.
Yeah.
You know, just the corpse.
Oh, I just had an idea. I hope I remember it when we come to this moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We get some really great acting. I mean, from Tony, obviously the acting is always great. But what's happening is he's not just being sad looking at the burnt corpse of his, you know, dead horse.
Right.
He's starting to look around with suspicious eyes.
Yeah.
You know, we get that close up on the broken light bulb, the broken light fixture. You know, he's kind of he's kind of getting a shifty look in his eyes.
Right.
Like, is there more to this than meets the eye? And didn't he say to Ralph Cifaretto, why don't you go see Piomai, take your mind off of things?
That's right.
I think Tony's remembering this in this moment.
And we don't skip a beat, which is what I like, that we come out of this scene right into the next scene.
Yeah.
You know, nothing, no filler in between.
Nope.
Tony arrives at Ralph's, and Ralph seems to be a little bit better, doesn't he?
Right.
He's clean shaven, got coffee, seems to be all right, doing well. Not so upset, not truly upset, not Tony upset with the news about Piomai.
Yeah, and plus, as Ralph tells Tony, he is partially upbeat because he got some good news about Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Justin's not going to die. And not only that, he's not going to be a quote-unquote vegetable. He's going to have some speech difficulties. He's going to need to basically like relearn how to talk, but he'll probably be able to walk. You know, it's not going to be the worst case scenario that they had feared.
Yeah. And I think it's safe to say, with Tony arriving at Ralph's, that he's really already made up his mind.
Yeah.
That Ralph was involved with this.
Yeah.
But once again, here we are given a great Sopranos mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Did Ralph kill Piomai?
Right.
Don't really know in this episode.
We don't know. And the way that, I mean, I think that this scene, this episode in general, took me such a long time to watch. Because there's so many scenes that I just kind of replayed them over and over again. And this entire sequence here, which is one of the most memorable sequences of the series, I would say. This scene in the kitchen. You know, it's just every little gesture and subtlety and moment between the two actors is just so perfectly calibrated as Tony begins to mount his accusations, and Ralphie, you know, kind of just is like, wait, is he really accusing me? And the way that you can sort of interpret Pantoliano's performance is he truly innocent and truly being blindsided by these accusations, or is he performing because he is guilty and he's just trying to hit just the right note in his performance of kind of like being flabbergasted at
the
accusation.
The
And at the same time, he's just sort of like, like, how could you think that? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But there's just something a little bit off. You know, I feel like Pantoliano does this. He plays this perfectly.
Yeah.
Because you're like, he sort of seems like he is lying, but he also doesn't seem like he's lying.
For sure. Oh, yeah. I totally agree. I mean, the camera work here too, and the shots that they selected. I mean, we get, you know, shots of just him scrambling eggs.
Right.
We just get his hands, and then we get the accusations from Tony, and we get the pause of the eggs being scrambled.
Right.
We don't get a look from Ralph, but we get just this hint of hesitation at the accusation.
Right.
Which is amazing. That's an amazing way to, like, you know, play it up of, is he or isn't he guilty?
Yeah. It's done with the shot choice. It's done with editing. I mean, this is like really, really sophisticated, fun filmmaking at its best.
And why would he kill Piomai, right? Well, there is the issue of Valentina.
Right.
Which he was given that news. But is that enough for him to go off and kill Tony's horse?
Tony's theory, right?
Right.
As he'll sort of put forth, is that Ralphie killed Piomai because they'd just taken out, what was it, 200 grand insurance policy?
Yes.
On the horse, because the horse was doing better.
Yes, so there is that.
There is that. And what is unspoken is, well, you want all this extra money because you need to care for your son. So would that motivate you to kill this horse?
Mm-hmm. This moment here is truly the moment where Tony knows it's him. I feel like knows it's him when he says,
what sick fuck would do something like that on purpose, huh? You know, Tony, Justin loves my sour cream is a secret ingredient.
Right.
What sick fuck?
Yeah.
And that way that Gandolfini says that line, what sick fuck?
Right.
So accusatory. You know, I think in that moment he's made up his mind.
He
takes off his jacket and he gets comfortable. You know?
Yeah. It's very clear. Yeah, it's very clear with the what sick fuck that Ralphie is under suspicion. Mm-hmm. And that is the true reason why Tony is here visiting, because Tony's going to confront him about it. And he wants that admission mm-hmm. of guilt, you know?
Yeah. And brings up Corky Lannucci.
Yeah.
Who was the guy who blew up the first Vesuvio.
Right.
That was the guy that Syl used.
Yeah.
And that is just a very blunt accusation mm-hmm. that Ralph spins around on. And this is where the confrontation really escalates.
Right. Because Ralphie has finally had it. And he basically starts yelling at Tony about how... And this is just... Here's the problem. Everything that Ralphie's saying is really just ammunition for Tony. Because Ralphie's talking Absolutely. Shit about the horse.
Yes. Which also a guilty person or an innocent person, really, should not do.
Right.
Like, you shouldn't be complaining about the deceased horse that this guy cares about. If you truly want him to believe yeah. you, that's probably not the right strategy.
I mean, it's kind of like O.J. Simpson, right? With the whole, you know, I didn't do it. Obviously, he got acquitted. But then he did that weird book, which was never actually published, which was, you know, if I did do it, basically, right. like, I didn't, but if I did.
Right.
And I kind of liken that to this, where it's like, Ralphie's really not helping his case here. You know, he's mm-hmm. basically pulling a, I didn't do it, but if I did, so what? Mm-hmm. Because the horse wasn't that great anyway, and the horse was just going to go downhill. Besides, it's just an animal.
Right. So, yeah, he says, we'll just cut this in here.
Yeah.
Because he could have de-escalated it by not saying, so what?
Right.
Tony saying, Jesus Christ, you did kill her.
No, I did not. But so what?
So what?
It was a fucking animal. $100,000 apiece. My kid's in the fucking hospital. I don't hear you complaining when I bring you a nice fat envelope. You don't give a shit where that comes from.
And then accusing Tony of eating too much meat.
That's the great thing about that. And so this is the point where I'm like, because the whole time I've been thinking, guilty, guilty. Ralph did it. It's a weird thing to do. It's like a weirdly involved little plot. Mm-hmm. So it seems unlikely, but Ralph just kind of exploding here. I'm like, wait, maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he really didn't. Because I feel like if he was guilty, he'd just be trying to assuage Tony, yeah. if that's the word, and just sort of get rid of him.
Yeah.
But he's confronting Tony in a very direct, extreme way, throwing out the whole concept of Tony being boss and you needing to be deferential to him and all of that. Ralphie's like, how dare you bother me with this, with my son in the hospital?
Yeah.
And then he has that great line, which, you know, prompts the fight, as you said, accusing Tony of eating too much meat, but in a really funny way. Like, what are you, like an animal lover or vegetarian all of a sudden? Like, right. you eat gabagool by, like, the truckload or whatever. So he's also calling Tony fat.
Exactly.
And this is when Tony punches him in the face.
Yeah. And so we don't need to break down the fight. We know who wins.
Well,
in the end.
I mean, let me just say this.
Yeah.
What I think is really great about this fight is how, and it kind of made me laugh, how both men know immediately that it's a fight to the death.
Sure.
That it has to be, in a way.
Yeah.
Because Ralph can't say what he just said to Tony, and Tony can't respond by hitting Ralph again. Mm-hmm. Remember, yeah. it's a very big deal to hit a made man. So immediately, this isn't just some fist fight where, like, one guy's going to get subdued and the other guy's going to walk away.
True.
This has to be a battle to the death.
That is very true. It's a chaotic scene. It's like it's what you would expect a kitchen fight to be, right? Like catching anything around you to yeah. use as a weapon, but winds up with Ralph being pummeled
right.
by Tony. Head slammed into the ground, choked
right.
to death, and gives him that punch one last time while accusing him of killing that beautiful creature, as Tony says.
Right. Tony has committed at this point to killing Ralph. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so he's like rationalizing why he's killing him kind of as he's killing him. What I think is cool about the scene, you know, just before Ralph winds up on the floor, just that great way that he grabs the pan of eggs and starts swinging it. You know, he uses weapons. Obviously, Tony is bigger and stronger just objectively than Joe Pantoliano, who seems to be a bit on the smaller side.
Yeah.
So Ralph has to use these weapons to make it a fair fight. The second one being, and this is very critical, a can of Raid, mm-hmm. which goes directly into Tony's eyeballs.
Yeah.
It causes a lot of problems for Tony for the rest of the episode.
It does. And we just take a breather from that.
I mean, God, though, that's brutal. I distinctly remember the first time I ever saw this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking that the killing of Ralph, 9 episodes into season 4... he's beaten to death, literally. Yep. Beaten to death. I remember Tony. Thinking it was one of the most violent things I'd ever seen in my life.
And I didn't do this, but I want some, maybe we should look back on this and I'll tweet about it, but I'm pretty sure Tony at this point, out of all of our characters, we've seen him kill the most people.
Hmm.
Like, I feel like that might be, he might be right up there.
Right.
We don't have to do it right now, but I think he's got at least 3 or 4 right now under his belt.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, there's 3 that pop to mind, 4 that I can instantly think of.
So there you go.
Right.
So.
Well, he is the star of this show.
That is
about
true.
About being a mafia guy.
It is true. It is true. But we move on from there because now we have to watch this whole process of cleaning up the scene. So he calls Chris.
Right.
Who in that exact moment starts to get high.
He's getting like super high too. I mean, this is the first time we've really seen him, I think, tying off the arm, you know.
He's well, like, yes, this is the first time we've seen him like proceed with
yeah.
We've caught him on the other end.
Right.
But it's like, Jesus, Chris, seriously.
Yeah.
30 minutes later, calls Tony. Then he finally arrives with all the wares mm-hmm. that Tony wants him to pick up. And I love this high reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Of Christopher, how Imperioli plays this. When he walks in and he just goes, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tony's like, I found him like this.
That's so good.
And, you know, as Tony's explaining why they have to get rid of Ralph, Chris's high expressions are great as well. I mean, it's just so good. Not a good time for Chris to be high around Tony. I feel like Tony is really like at an agitated level that anything could tip him over to just go on a killing rampage.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, this is just really well played. The lighting of the cigarette. I mean, mm-hmm. all of it.
Right. And I mean, just before that, when Tony really rips into Chris and is like, you're high. And Chris tries to play it off like, yeah, I am high, but I just smoked a little bit of a joint. But then Tony's like, no, your nose is running. Like, you're a junkie.
Yeah.
You did heroin. You're super fucked up. This is completely unacceptable.
Right.
And then Chris, with that great line, I hope we can drop it in there.
You promised me you wouldn't do that shit anymore.
I didn't.
Really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it.
Spot on. Yeah. Not that I would know. and then they bring Ralph upstairs to his bathroom, dump him in, and Chris pulls off the wig.
This is one of the great moments. You know, I keep saying that about this episode. One of the great episodes of all time, one of the great scenes of all time. Mm. And this is one of the great gags that they've ever done. You know, it truly is black comedy at its finest. You know, it's very morbid.
Yeah.
But it's so great. And then I don't know how viewers feel about this, but it never really occurred to me that like Ralph's hair was fake. It was just a big hairpiece.
Right.
You know? But then as soon as it comes off, you're like, oh, of course it was. My favorite line comes into play here.
Okay. Well, especially since Joe Pantoliano is bald.
I guess I hadn't really thought about that too.
Right.
That I mean, like
there's that if you know.
It has been many years. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, Pantoliano had been bald for a while at that point. And mm-hmm. he was bald in The Matrix. I don't know if he was in Memento.
No, he had like a military small buzz cut.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. But anywho.
Oh, but man, that is so, so good.
It is.
Yeah.
So they proceed to start the cutting up and cleaning of the whole house. And I got to tell you, I don't feel comfortable that they really cleaned up the whole place very well.
Right.
I mean, not that there's no known murder.
Right.
Right. But there has to be something left behind.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you've got Tony. He's still, I mean, they really maintain this, that he's really hurting.
Oh, he's from fucked up
the raid in his eyes. Yeah. You know, he's been poisoned, right? And it's really tough to get over. And then plus you have Christopher, who is in a full-on heroin high. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all if they missed something.
Right.
You know, a spot here or less some evidence there. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, one of the next scenes, they take a break. Mm-hmm. They're sitting down at the couch. Chris is still sort of high, but starts talking about Adriana and how they might still be able to have kids.
Right.
So they're actually, you know, he's trying to be a good man to her and go through with, you know, talking to the doctors that need to be talked to. But he's really afraid to have kids. And it's just obviously a very odd moment to have this conversation for them. But I like how Tony is kind of lying to Chris in this moment, right? He's not giving him the truth of what actually happened.
Right.
Because he can't really admit he killed one of his captains.
Well, let's not forget, and we didn't mention this, but the moment that Chris walks in, it's like pretty obvious what happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's obvious to Chris, even though he's, you know, on heroin. He notices the blood on Tony's shirt, which Tony has to kind of explain. He looks around. It's just really clear.
Yeah.
The fact that Chris was even called, you know, I think sort of tells you everything that you need to know if you're Chris. Chris knows that Tony killed Ralphie.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it's just out of respect and politeness, really, that he doesn't bring it up. Mm-hmm. But he knows.
Mm-hmm. He politely mentions, too, that Polly has been out of town the whole day. So it couldn't have been him.
Yeah.
He's kind of playing along with the lie as well. You know,
yeah.
Polly's got an alibi. That's good for Polly.
Yeah.
And then they pick up back up in the bathroom. Chris brings up Pi as they're putting Ralph's head and hands in the bowling ball bag. Oh, but this is what I was going to mention before that I'm glad I remembered. Tony's walking up the stairs carrying a rug, chains, metal, like things to bundle up Ralph, very reminiscent to the chains and bundle that carted off Pyomai. You know, there's an interesting juxtaposition there. Happened to Pyomai, now it's happening to Ralph.
Yeah.
Chains and tarp and everything.
Right, right. Yeah, no, you're totally right. And I think we get in this scene, you know, some of the most graphic moments.
Right.
That we've ever had in this show.
A severed head.
Severed head, severed hands. One of the hands.
Dripping with blood.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the hands kind of doesn't quite like land in the bag correctly.
You know,
Chris has to adjust it. It's just interesting, you know, this real like horror movie territory. But it's not gratuitous because that's what's so great about this whole second half of this episode, the disposal of Ralph Cifaretto, is that this is literally just what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's not like just over the top violence for shock value. It's just straight up like, no, this is what they would need to do. They have to, you know, dispose of the body. They have to separate the identifying, you know,
features
of the corpse. So that's the head and the hands. Mm-hmm. And while they go about it, they're just talking about their lives, you know, in a way. They talk about sort of like the banal things of like, oh, am I ready to have like a kid, blah, blah, blah. You know, just to sort of not have to really admit to themselves what it is they're really doing.
Right.
And I love this moment too, where Gandolfini, once he looks at the head and the hands in the bag, he sort of snaps out of it. He's sort of been in a trance and then he sort of realizes what he's looking at.
Yeah. There is that moment.
Yeah.
Shakes his head almost.
Yeah. Closes the bag.
Right. So they leave to put Ralph's body and his parts in separate places.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just using this moment, like you said, for just the banal conversation.
Yeah.
It's a funny moment to be lecturing Chris about drugs while they're carrying a dead, severed body to dump it on a lake.
Yeah.
You know, lecturing who here?
Yeah, yeah. You murdered a guy earlier, then you chopped up his body, and then now you're disposing of it in the dead of night.
Yeah. And then, interesting detail, they go to Mikey Palmisi's dad's farm.
Right.
Where his dad is retired to bury the head and hands, which I you know, I heard that and I was like, Palmisi, really?
Yeah, oh, I took note of that too. That.
Yeah. And then Chris Hotwire is a bulldozer and has no fucking idea how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tony uses it and they dig a significant hole to bury the head and hands.
Yeah. I mean, just very methodical, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you get from these scenes, just one after the other.
Yeah. And then they end at the Bing. And Chris says here, you know, he's still on edge about what just happened.
Right.
He says,
here's the problem, as I see it, with Ralph getting whacked. People could take it the wrong way. What are you trying to convey to me here? Friends of ours. Like it could happen to them. Without, you know, the protection of the boss. You're the only other one that knows about it.
That is a significant exchange between the two of them, because this is the guy that Tony wants to put his trust in, somebody he thinks is blood, and Christopher has to be reminded by him, you're the only one who knows.
Right.
So they're, according to everybody else, Ralph's just gone.
Yeah, Ralph just disappeared.
And I like how too they call it disappearing.
Right.
Chris says it was right to disappear him. It's an interesting use of that word.
Yeah No, I agree. And I love how right before that, you know, Tony looks at Chris. He doesn't ask the question. His look asks the question. Can I trust you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to take what happened today to the grave?
Good point.
You can never speak about this to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we both are on the same page about that, right?
Right.
And then Chris doesn't say simply, yeah, you can trust me. He says, we were right to disappear him for the business.
Good point.
Just more of that great Sopranos writing of... It's clear what's being said, but they don't use the words that literally voice what's being said, you know?
Yep. Well said, better than I on that. The next scene, coming up to the end of the episode, Junior walks across his lawn to the next door neighbor and asks for ice cream.
Right.
It would seem, also under the spying of Agent Harris.
Yeah.
That something is actually wrong with Junior.
Exactly.
We end Junior's storyline in this episode with his confused look about his own house when he walks back in.
Absolutely amazing. So the whole time we thought this storyline was just pure comedy and a big joke. And then we get this very foreboding final scene with
Huge.
Junior.
Huge. This is a big deal.
Yeah. And it's like, wait, here's a big reveal.
Yeah.
Junior actually does have dementia.
Yeah.
He's damaged. He will never be the same.
As Christopher says, damaged goods. Ladies, right. Junior is damaged goods.
Right. Yeah. But yes, very significant.
What did you think about the last scene here? Because I mentioned previous episode, Sopranos always knows how to do a really great ending. This ending, I felt, was not as strong.
Oh, okay.
But not bad.
Yeah.
Ambiguous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple things going on here. So Tony wakes up next morning, right?
At the Bing.
At the Bing. No sign of Christopher. You know, mm-hmm. He's looking around for him. Tony walks up to the mirror in, like, you know, the stripper's room, you know, where they get ready. And pictures of all the strippers all over the mirror. And then, you know, he kind of... And I love how... The camera did not zoom in on this. They just linger on the shot. So you kind of have to be like, wait, why are we looking at all of these naked women? It's mm-hmm. not just because they're naked women. It's because the picture of Tracy is still there on the mirror.
Yeah.
And that's Tony kind of, he doesn't have an expression on his face, but what you get from that is, I did it. I avenged her. Finally.
Yeah.
I did it for her. Maybe it's just a rationalization.
Sure.
For Tony. Maybe he doesn't even really think that, but he's just sort of like, well, it was eye for an eye.
Mm-hmm.
I was never okay with what Ralphie did to her. I never forgave him for it. And now he's gone. So it's as okay as it's ever going to be.
Right.
And then, yeah, still looking for Chris, pops open the door to the parking lot. We get the entire frame, you know, flooded with light. Interesting effect there, the overexposure mm-hmm. before we go to credits. And yeah, I mean, I guess it just sort of says like Chris is the ambiguous note.
Yeah.
Tony has basically placed so much on Chris at this point, right? And there's this very, very significant thing that only Chris knows about. Can Chris really be trusted? Why did he just leave the Bing without telling Tony? Mm-hmm. Where is Christopher, you know, metaphorically as yeah. well as literally?
Right. Yeah. Oh, good. That is actually, as you broke it down, a better ending than I thought.
Yeah, man, they did a good job.
They did. No, the whole episode is just so good.
Yeah.
Really, top five. I'm firm on that.
Right, yeah. Sure. I mean, there's just so many moments in this episode where it's like, I really would like to just go in so deep with the writers and like really annoy them
yeah.
and just be like, okay, let's watch the episode together. I just pause it at various points and be like, what did that mean? What was that about?
Right.
And as I mentioned, I think they did do a commentary track, which maybe I actually want to listen to again sure. after we're done recording this.
Sure.
But there's just so many beats where you're like, wow, like it would have been so cool to know how they came up with some of these ideas, which are just so clever and fun and, mm-hmm. you know, exemplify what The Sopranos is all about.
Well, that does it for this episode of The Sopranos Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Join us next week. Until then, if you're enjoying the podcast and want to support it, there are many ways to do that. Like us on iTunes, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. We're on TuneIn now, so you can ask your Alexa, hey, Alexa, play The Sopranos Show on TuneIn, and our latest episode will automatically play. Which is pretty cool.
I think that's cool.
We're on that now. And yeah, so all those things, Twitter, you know what I usually say here. And like we do with every episode, we end with our favorite line. I had my favorite line was just the exchange between Svetlana and Janice, because we haven't seen these two together in a while. And I thought it was so funny because the character Svetlana is so funny. When she walks up, Janice says,
Svetlana. I've been wanting to talk to you.
I bring nurse. I don't come to see you.
I should never have taken your prosthesis. But it did bring me to the Lord.
You're a boring woman.
Yeah.
Just pushes her aside.
Yeah, literally pushes her aside. It's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite line comes with Tony and Chris in the bathroom. Ralph is dead in the tub, and it's that moment, right, when Chris pulls off the wig that he doesn't know was a wig, and he looks at Tony, he goes, did you know? And Tony goes,
so high on skeg, you wouldn't know if he had your mother's muff on his head.
I have to say that is one of my all-time favorite Sopranos lines. I think about it regularly. It just makes me laugh. It's so great.
It is.
I love that it comes in this episode.